I'm joined right now by the wonderful pianist Simona Dinnerstein, who is talking to me from, I assume, from your home in Brooklyn. Yes?
Yes, I am. Yep.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back on the program today. You have an album coming out a little bit later in September. It's called A Character of Quiet. It pairs the music of Franz Schubert, his last piano sonata, with some of the etudes by Philip Glass. Let me just start by saying that I love the fact that you've paired these two composers. I mean, they share some similarities, not the least of which is that they were born on the same day, January 31st, in separate centuries. But there's something about the music here that really speaks to kind of the inner voice. And this is an album that was born of the pandemic. I wonder if you can talk about how this album came to be and how you decided to put these composers together in the same space.
Yes, well, I'm really glad you like the pairing, and I think what you said about the inner voices is really beautiful. It's true. They both composers, I think, have a very introspective quality and an understated quality to their writing. They have a very subtle use of harmony, where we're just changing one note within a chord completely shifts the mood to something completely different. And they both have a sense of time expanding in their music through, very elongated phrases and the use of patterns and repetition, which they share. How the recording came to be is interesting because in March when we New York City went on lockdown, I felt that it had an effect on me where I didn't feel that I could play the piano, and it was kind of alarming. Of course, that was the least of what was going on with anyone. But for me, just watching what was happening around me made me feel very frozen and not creative. And I couldn't play for about 2 months. I really found it very, very difficult, and I hardly practiced. And that's never happened to me before. And so I was talking to Adam Abeshaus, who is my record producer. He's produced all of my albums, and he's become a good friend over the years. And I was telling him about this, and he said to me he thought that I should record. And he said, you've always wanted to record on your piano, and I can come to your home in Brooklyn and record you there. And I thought, there were so many reasons not to do it. How is he going to capture any kind of beautiful sound in the acoustical space of my room, even though my piano is beautiful? And he was like, don't worry, I'll figure that out. And I said, what about cars? And he said, no, we'll do it in the middle of the night, it'll be okay. And then I said, well, but I just don't know how I'm going to be inspired to do anything. And he said, don't worry, when I get there and you start playing, you're going to find that everything that you've been feeling is going to come out while you play. And he was completely right. That's exactly what happened.
Well, we should point out Adam Abeshaus is, one of the best music producers in the business going. I mean, he really worked a miracle. As much as you bring your artistry to this recording, I think his artistry is evident as well.
Oh, yes. I mean, it was actually a very interesting I'm fascinated by the recording process, and we've now done, I think this is our 11th album together, and what's so funny about it is that, I don't know if this is of interest, but I mean, the placement of the mics, it turns out that I seem to always want it exactly the same way. And it doesn't seem to matter about the acoustical space. So, you know, he was trying to accommodate the fact that my room is not a concert hall, and he placed the mics in a different place than normal. And I checked the sound in the beginning, and I was like, this doesn't sound like me. Mm-hmm. And finally, it kept moving things around. And in the end, when we finally, I listened, and I was like, yes, that's my sound. He was like, you know, Simone, I should just always, like, just start off with this with this position, because this is the position that works regardless of anything else.
You talk about recording it at night, you know, things we don't necessarily think about, street noise and sirens and things like that. I mean, New York is a fairly loud city, even at night. I mean, did you face any challenges in making this recording that you wouldn't face in the studio? And also, I guess, you know, the idea of playing this music on your Steinway and your home at night. There's a very romantic vision there that kind of aligns with the character of the music itself. What was that experience like for you?
Well, certainly I think that that Schubert's sonata was meant to be played in a room. You know, I think his music has an intimacy to it, and a private nature to it that perfectly suits playing it at home. That must have been how most people discovered his music at that time, was by playing it themselves in their homes. For me, I was actually concerned about what it was going to be like to record in my house, because there's a certain kind of stimulation you get by being in a concert hall. I always record in concert halls. I don't record in studios, because I like the sound of the hall. I like to hear the sound come back to me in the acoustical space of a concert hall, and I find that very inspiring. So all of my recordings have been done in that way. And I thought, am I going to be able to hear that when I'm at home? And in addition, it was also a little bit odd for me to have my family nearby, because I'm not used to them being able to hear me when I do things like this. I mean, they hear me practicing, but I'm not used to them hearing me, you know, focusing in this way on a recording. And our house is such that, of course, they would hear it. So in the end, what happened was that I decided that I was not going to, once that we checked the sound, I was just going to stay in my room and play. And I wound up playing like 5 hours straight both nights without checking, without going down to hear it. And that kept me in this kind of headspace that was very profound and deep and intense. It was also quite hot. So it was all of that combined. In terms of the sounds of the outside, June in New York is when we were having many different protests in the city, which could be heard from where I live. There were, you know, we were going to record much earlier in the month, and then New York had a curfew, and so Adam couldn't drive to my house to do the recording. We had to delay the recording, and There were lots of helicopters and sirens. So it was interesting because had we recorded it in May, then it was actually at night, the only sound were the occasional sirens, but it was actually very quiet otherwise. So there were lots of different things that happened, and somehow those two nights, it was very quiet outside, and there was really, I mean, I'm just amazed. There, you know, when we listened back to the recording, when we were editing it, I couldn't hear any street noise.
Let's talk a little bit about Philip Glass. I mean, he wrote a piano concerto for you. These etudes he wrote, I guess, starting in the 1990s. There are, what, 20 of them altogether, I think?
Maybe more. I think he started them even earlier than the 90s, okay. but I could be wrong. Yeah, there are 20 etudes, and he basically, I think he did the first set of 10 earlier on and then completed the second set of 10 more recently.
Now, you've got three different etudes on here, number 16, number 6, and number 2. Can you talk about how you chose those particular etudes?
Yes. So, starting back in, I think, 2016, I decided to make a recital program juxtaposing the music of Schubert and Glass. I had an instinct that there was a deep connection between their music. And so I listened to pretty much everything that Glass wrote for the piano. And I found all of these different pieces that I thought were particularly Schubertian. And these three etudes were the ones that I selected as being that would fit in this program. And in the recital program, I played the first half of the concert juxtaposed etudes and one of the Metamorphoses with Schubert's impromptus, and I'd go back and forth between them without any pause. And then the second half of the concert was his etude number 2, followed immediately without pause by the B-flat Schubert sonata. And what's fascinating is that I had so many people in the audience come up to me afterwards and say they actually at a certain point didn't know which composer was which. Recently I was talking to Richard Guerin, who's from the Orange Mountain Music, which is Philip Glass's record label, and they've released this CD. They will be releasing this CD. Richard said he was talking to Philip Glass about this recording, and Philip said he was listening to it, and that at a certain point he was listening and he thought, did I write that? And then he realized it was the Schubert. And I thought that was really just fabulous. Yeah. Because, there is a real deep link.
Yeah, I've often thought of Schubert as sort of the original minimalist, you know, especially with his songs and the strophism that he uses and the alternation between major and minor keys.
Yes, definitely.
You've talked a little bit about that Schubert sonata. I mean, it's his final sonata. He died very young, as we know. Finished it just a couple of months before his death. A lot of people think of it as kind of almost speaking to, you know, the looming shadow, the specter of death. How would you characterize that piano sonata of Schubert?
Yes, I know a lot of people focus on that. I mean, in general, I tend to avoid trying to interpret how somebody's personal life is connected to their art. I mean, just to start with, the scale of the piece, it's a huge piece.
Yeah.
And it feels like a real journey, and it also feels like he thought of the four movements as one whole, without a doubt. Like, I feel that, I don't always feel that about people's sonatas, most composers' sonatas, but this sonata has a feeling that from the first note to the last note, there's a connection. And what's interesting about the first movement is that while it's in the key of B flat major, there's something incredibly poignant about it. And I always find music that is poignant in a major key or sad in a major key particularly alluring. I think that that's, I don't know. It's always, I've always been grabbed by music like that. And this sonata is one of those kinds of pieces, that movement in particular, where you can't quite tell. The character is shifting so much that every time you revisit that opening, you know, it happens three times because you have this big repeat, and then you have it in the recapitulation. It comes back yet again, and in that time he changes it ever so slightly. It's these little changes that just make you feel like almost like you're looking at your life in a completely different way, depending on where in the road of your life you're in. And yeah, it's hard to talk about music, isn't it?
Before I let you go, just tell us where the title of this album comes from, A Character of Quiet. It's a very ear-catching phrase.
Yes, that's a line from William Wordsworth's epic poem, The Prelude, which is this huge autobiographical poem that I was reading at that time. And this particular passage is dealing with getting away from the busyness of life, being alone, and the kind of the presence of an other that you feel in that situation. And A Character of Quiet is part of this passage. It's part of the line, and I just thought that little excerpt perfectly describes the feeling of the music on this disc.
I've been speaking with pianist Simona Dinnerstein, whose new album, A Character of Quiet, is coming out from Orange Mountain Music. The release date is September 18th, music of Philip Glass and Franz Schubert. Simona, thanks for this album. Thank you for your artistry, and thank you for talking with us about this album.
Thank you. It was so lovely to speak with you, Brad.